Good afternoon. Today is Tuesday, May 14th, and we have a agenda before us. We're going to get started right away, and then we might need to recess for some action on the Senate floor in shortly. But what we want to start with today is PTEC, Pathways in Technology and Early College High. Our first testifier will be Principal Rashid Davis with Pathways in Technology Early College High. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Davis. You could kindly introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I am Rashid Farad Davis, the founding principal of Pathways in Technology Early College High School, which opened in 2011. And you might want to know what PTEC is.
Well, just a moment. I'm going to introduce Bao Vang, and then we want to hear from both of you. Ms. Vang, welcome to the committee. Ms. Vang is the president and CEO of the Hmong American Partnership on behalf of St. Paul Community Schools of Excellence. Welcome to the committee. Just introduce yourself for the record, please.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, committee members. Thank you for having me today. My name is Bao Vang, and I'm the present CEO of the Hmong American Partnership and also the Community School of Excellence.
Thank you very much. Mr. Rashid, I would love if you could tell us a bit about PTEC, how it started, why it's important, successes. Kind of just give us a little bit of background, please.
Sure.
Mr. Rashid.
PTEC opened in 2011 as a partnership with the New York City Department of Education, the City University of New York, specifically the New York City College of Technology as a college partner, and IBM as the industry partner. It came together as a result of looking at the skills information from the Harvard Graduate Education Skills Gap Report that came from Robert Schwartz. But the reality of it is that even adults that had a bachelor's degrees and master's degrees because of changing in technologies had to really found themselves going back to education to get different types of certifications. But with this particular partnership, the thought was if New York City could start early with partners from grade 9 with students who are not academically screened or test for admissions, we could actually help with two problems, STEM degree completion and diversity with STEM degree completion for a pipeline to the workforce. And so we opened with 104 students in 2011, phasing in additional 100 students each year. So as I'm sitting here today in 2019, we have already completed two 9 through 14 cohorts. That means grades 9 through 14. We're calling the two first years of college grades 13 and 14. And the thought being that students in our supported pathway would have better results than students who graduate from high school and enroll immediately in college to complete a two-year degree. And that's why it's called the grades 9 through 14. Students in our model have the opportunity to complete a computer science degree from New York City College of Technology. They're taught by the college faculty who actually come to the high school. Students can actually start taking college classes as early as the summer of the ninth grade year, taught by the college faculty, and then by their junior year, they actually travel 30 minutes away to the college to actually complete one of two degree pathways. What we have seen with a 95% black and Hispanic population, majority male specifically, our STEM degree completion rates are better than percentages of students who have actually graduated high school and enrolled in college 6 years later. National Student Clearinghouse data shows that students in particularly who come from low-income high schools only complete a STEM degree at 8%. In high-income schools, the highest percentage of STEM degree completion 6 years after enrolling in college is 16%. What we have shown with two completed cohorts, our first cohort has 53% of STEM degree completion. Our second cohort has 40% of STEM degree completion. Now, we know also when we look at the data from National Student Clearinghouse, they are not dealing with the same type of demographics. So to be able to have the types of degree completion with a rigorous program in computer sciences from this particular partnership lets us know that something is working. You have in front of you two particular handouts that show the skills information, but also one particular handout in particularly shows you state 6-year, 2-year completion rates in our two cohorts of STEM degree completion rate disaggregated by gender and ethnicity. Keep in mind that the state's public 2-year completion rates that are 6-year are not STEM degrees, but all degrees, and all of our degrees are under computer sciences. We also have 24 students currently working at IBM, and they were hired all before the age of 21. Where we started with one school and one community partner, and 104 students in 2011, 2019 we'll be servicing 250,000 students in 14 countries. And so people are interested in PTEC because of the opportunity to connect the disconnected. Many of our students are underrepresented in Brooklyn. New York State was the first state to actually replicate PTEC as a model. But the disconnected student looks different depending on where you are. And so the majority of students who are in the state replication are disconnected white males in rural parts of New York. And so it's interesting to see how other different parts of the city, state, and country are connecting the disconnected by having the opportunities of college, industry, and high school working backwards from a scope and sequence that we've agreed upon that say if we connect students, give each student a mentor, an industry mentor, so they can see inspiration and aspiration as they enter grade 9, we could begin to close not only opportunity gaps, but achievement gaps by making sure that everyone comes to the table with a different mindset, but also with real opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. Comments, members? Mr. Davis, so speak just a little bit, and I think you kind of alluded to this a little bit, but and so we've seen some growth here in the last 8 years, and we've seen good completion rates. What do you think is hindering PTEC from developing further so that more students have this opportunity to see this pathway from ninth grade through to industry credential and job?
Mm-hmm. Well, we've gone from one school in New York City to 9 schools in New York City, and so I would definitely like to see that growth move faster, but it definitely does take the industry's partnership. So, as I said, we started with one industry partner, now there are 500 industry partners. So the industry has to come together with also the post-secondary institution or organization that will be dealing with the credential after the high school diploma. And so you really need that three-prong of a partnership, the high school, the college, and the industry, to say this is the pipeline so that way you can have first-in-line job opportunities. I think that our outcomes, and particularly this year, 2019, we have students who have not only completed a 2-year degree, but many of them have completed their 4-year degree. And particularly, I have a button on of a young lady who's a track athlete. She runs for St. Augustine University, and actually she graduated on Saturday with her bachelor's degree, and actually 2016 she finished her 2-year degree. And so the opportunity for families to actually walk away debt-free from a rigorous computer information systems, computer sciences, healthcare, manufacturing, and I'm mentioning those different career types because those are the different industry partners who have come to the table since IBM's involvement. So it's not just about IBM's schools, but I can speak to at least 4 IBM schools in 4 cities that can articulate STEM college graduates 3 years after ninth grade. That's New York City, Newburgh, New York, Norwalk, Connecticut, and Chicago, Illinois.
And then just one final question before we get to our next testifier. Tell me a little bit about what a PTEC school looks like. I imagine it might be different depending on the partners and the city, but just kind of give us a layout of, you know, standalone schools, schools within schools. What does it look like?
So we are the only standalone school. And we are a standalone school because we started as a transformation turnaround under a school improvement grant when we opened in 2011. But those that have chosen to replicate are using a school within a school opportunity. So that way they can deal with the different populations who are disconnected to give opportunities. Our students, as I said, while they're younger, the college faculty comes on site to teach the college classes after they have met the definition of college ready, which is defined by New York State assessments. And then by grade 11, the students have a paid internship in the summer, a six-week skills-based paid internship. But they also then start to make that voyage to the college, which is like 30 minutes away by themselves, where they're taught by the college faculty. Some of the, since the 2011 year, we've had some high school faculty that have been adjuncted by the college to be able to teach the college curriculum. But first, our first students who have completed the degrees, there's 117 specifically from our school, were all taught by and hired by the college faculty who does the own evaluating of the college faculty as well.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got a few quick questions. The paid internships, who pays for them, the employer, or how does that work?
So there are two buckets of finances that pay for the internships. IBM, our industry partner, pays the lion's share, but then also New York City Department of Education with the Economic Development Council actually provides summer learning opportunities for students.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And yeah, Mr. Davis, continuing. Okay, 9 through 12, whether it's a standalone independent, which you have, or a school within a school, these concentrate on STEM courses?
Mr. Davis.
Is that correct?
Our school focuses on STEM and computer information systems. Some focus on healthcare, nursing, manufacturing, advertising. It depends on the industry's involvement that come to say, this is a pipeline of talent that we would like to join to make sure that we can help them finish high school, college, and industry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Then one final question. So where do they learn English and history? And I could say something else, but I won't today.
Okay.
Mr. Davis.
The students still have to meet all New York City and New York State requirements for a high school diploma. So they're not just doing STEM, but they're actually experiencing high school, college, and industry preparation simultaneously. So they have to still meet all their high school requirements within a four-year time frame. It's grades 13 and 14 are not compulsory. So it goes back to how we use time and human capital to be able to have a longer school day, a longer school year, to give the students the opportunity for them to see the value in wanting to complete high school and college.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Then finishing up. So in the 9th through 12th grade years, they are subjected to these other disciplines.
All of the required state requirements for a high school diploma.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Depp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Davis, welcome to Minnesota.
Thank you.
Yesterday, today are beautiful days here, so I hope you've been appreciating them. We certainly are.
Yes.
You described two dynamics that I want to understand the New York context better for. One dynamic was 11th and 12th graders leaving the high school and going to college and taking college credit, and I assume college and high school credit-bearing courses. And the other was some of your high school instructors being accredited to teach college courses in the high school. Are those common in New York? If a kid went to a different high school than the PTEC high school, would they have the opportunity to leave at 11th grade to take college courses, or would instructors in that high school, you pick the high school, other than, well, you pick the high school, of the open enrollment? High schools, not the ones you test into in New York City, would that student in another high school have the opportunity to have an instructor who is teaching a college-level course and receive college credits?
Well, early college is not only in New York, and so early colleges around the country have used the opportunity to adjunct their high school teachers to teach dual enrollment college courses. We, as I said, in the first iteration did not use high school teachers. We only used college faculty. And so only the last 2 years have we only hired two of our teachers to actually do that. But students definitely in other early college models will have their high school faculty who have been adjuncted by the college to teach the college vetted degree pathways.
Madam Chair.
Chair Daphne.
Thank you. So what about the New York City is a complicated place.
It is.
But a regular kid at a regular high school,
mm-hmm.
So not identified as an early college model or a PTEC, two questions. Would they have the opportunity to take college-level courses in the high school, and would they have or have the opportunity to leave the high school to take college courses and receive dual credit there?
They would have the opportunity through a partnership called College Now to leave their high school to take college classes, but that's not in a degree pathway with the first-in-line job opportunities with an industry partnership. And those courses are taught by the CUNY faculty who actually offers the College Now program. But those are courses, not in a rigorous degree pathway that leads to job opportunities.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Davis. So it sounds like there's more flexibility here in Minnesota and more access through dual enrollment as well as through PSEO than the average student receives in New York.
Chair Dabney.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about the flexibility compared to New York, but I do the thing I must say is I've just received a text. We are needed on the Senate floor.
Oh, okay.
Like now. So what we're going to do is we're going to recess. We'll come back, and I'm hoping our testifiers can stay. We have a couple others as well. And then we'll hear from Ms. Vang, Principal Vang, and then also we'll have both Mr. Davis and Principal Vang if there are further questions. So we anticipate it will be a half-hour Senate session. Of course, everything is flexible at this time. I've been told we will be processing three bills very quickly. So the Senate is in recess until the call of the chair. We would anticipate 2:45.
Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, I thought it was 2:30.
No, you answered that. We do.
No problem.
The Water Commission.
They decide that.
To be honest with you, I don't know. I had enough to do to keep up with my own conference duties.
Peter Devin, you ready?
Yes.
The Senate E-12 Education Committee will reconvene. Thank you, testifiers and members, for your patience. The Senate did get through those bills rather quickly. Mr. Davis, when we recessed, you were just in the midst of answering a question from Chair Dabney, really dealing with what I gathered the difference between PTEC and we already have open enrollment, dual enrollment options like college and the schools, PSEO. And what I think you were starting to get to is, well, what's the difference? If you have those items, if we have those innovations already in Minnesota, why do we need PTEC?
Yeah.
Mr. Davis.
Sure. I, as I said, I would like to direct your attention to this data sheet that you have. And this shows you two-year public degrees from public institutions, six-year data sets. And you can find your own state of Minnesota, but there are two data points, one specifically first completion at starting institution. And these are six-year data points. For a two-year degree, we're talking about 40.93% for Minnesota. All of our degrees at PTEC that you have there in the yellow are three-year percentages, so half the time. And I want you to draw attention specifically to our black students. 48% have earned a STEM degree. In the first cohort, 38% have earned a STEM degree in the second cohort. Now, remember that your data is showing those are for all degree types. So I wonder what the STEM degree completion looks like. So when I look at our students who are underrepresented in STEM, and typically black students have a lower completion rates than their peers, white or Asian, I think that that data set speaks to something different that's going on in terms of in the partnership of PTEC that has high school, college, and industry working together to give underrepresented students who have not been traditionally on a pathway to seeing themselves as success in all degrees, but specifically in computer science degrees, speaks to a different set of outcomes than what's currently happening.
Mr. Dabney, Chair Dabney.
Just a couple quick questions, trying to understand the program, and would something that seems to work quite well in New York City mm-hmm. work as well in rural Minnesota? And you'd mentioned rural New York State. You said there, I believe there were six programs, PTEC programs now within the city.
Nine in New York City and over 100 throughout across the United States.
Okay. Of those nine in the city, yours focuses on computer science. You'd indicated that others had other focuses. Are they all solo focuses? In other words, you don't offer a program in healthcare and a program in modern manufacturing as well as computer science. You only do computer science, or am I wrong?
Tell me,
please.
We have two degree pathways in computer sciences. We only have one industry partner. We do have other schools that have multiple career paths and multiple industry partners.
And then one last question or two. How many students in your school? And I know I looked at the Utah PTEC program, and that one was shuttered after 4 years. And they saw some significant attrition in the 70%. Mm-hmm. rate from, you know, within a year. How many kids in your school? What's the attrition rate that you see?
Mr. Davis.
So in grades 9 through 14, we have 600 students, and we haven't really seen attrition rates like what Utah have seen. What we have seen is more than 70% of the students who have met high school graduation requirements in 4 years say yes in terms of to PTEC. When it comes to students actually dropping out of school, we have only lost maybe four students out of about four cohorts of four-year students going from grades 9 through 14.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. Any further questions?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Davis.
I do just want to make a clarity that sometimes when we mention the word STEM, we think that we are forsaking all other entities like civics and arts. And I look at STEM and civics going hand in hand. It's very important, and particularly that our students understand that STEM is a way of the future, and understanding that in order to lead, if we don't provide them with the opportunity, we'll be looking outside of the United States in terms of to have those STEM degrees actually fulfilled.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Davis. And does the PTEC New York, does that bring in new students who would be STEM students that might not otherwise be STEM students? Or do you think it's just where kids who are likely to be involved in STEM choose to go? In other words, what I'm trying to get to is, are we expanding the pool? Are we expanding the pool of kids interested in STEM?
We are an open enrolled school, so starting at grade 9 with no academic screening and no testing for admission. So we look like the equivalent of an open enrolled college, but we're starting earlier before the students have actually finished high school. So you are expanding the pool and helping some students who may never have thought of themselves as actually going to college actually walk away with a debt-free college degree and first in line job opportunities with an industry partner.
Thank you. Chair Yukin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question, too. How does it work in New York when it comes to working with your higher education institutions? You keep mentioning debt-free and free, so who's paying for those 2 years of college? And when this was rolled out, was it a really tight partnership with your higher education institutions?
Mr. Davis?
New York City and New York State already have working relationships to give students in New York City the opportunity for free college course taken. That's through college now. This particular opportunity was more robust. We are the 13th early college in New York City, but we're the first that has an industry partnership that offers first-in-line job opportunities. So there is already an arrangement between New York City and the City University of New York to make sure that they can have that alignment between high school and college and having more students actually leaving New York City education system with both a high school diploma and a 2 or 4 year degree.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Yukin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just so I make sure I heard you right, you already have a free college model in New York for those 2 year degrees. So the structure's already set up for that.
Mr. Davis.
Free college course taking is available for every high school student. A rigorous pathway with first-in-line job opportunities with industry is different in terms of what we offer, and that PTEC grant is different from the college now or even the early college opportunity that exists.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. Ms. Bang, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Bao Vang. I'm the, again, President and CEO of the Hmong American Partnership and also the CEO of the Community School of Excellence. Thank you again for allowing us the opportunity to testify in support of Senate House File 2400. For over 28 years, Hmong American Partnership's mission is to help people in our community embrace the strength of their culture while achieving their potential by providing holistic wraparound services that help people to move from poverty to self-sufficiency and to prosperity. We are the largest Hmong nonprofit organization in the state of Minnesota and the largest Asian-led organization in the state of Minnesota, serving about 25,000 people on an annual basis. The state of Minnesota has experienced an influx of refugees and immigrants, of which highest growth is in the Southeast Asian population. The Hmong community is the largest group in the state with over 85,000 people. And 38% of our people are under the age of 18, and a little over 50% of the people in our population are aged 24 years old or younger. That is approximately 42,000 future workers in need of jobs in the next 10 to 20 years. Additionally, people from the Southeast Asian population remains the poorest and have the highest rates of unemployment, and underemployment, including the highest dropout rates in high school and post-secondary education. Young adults, particularly youth of color with no high school degree and post-secondary education, are the most vulnerable. Lack of work experience as a young adult often leads to dismal outcomes that includes reduced productivities and regressed wages. Today, we face one of the largest workforce challenges. In the information technology age, digital talent is critical to address the digital divide. The shortage of labor or the digital gap is hampering the success of organizations. companies become less competitive and lose out on billions of dollars. The Bureau of Labor Statistics is estimating a growth of 13% between the year of 2016 and 2026, adding 557,100 new jobs in IT. It is also estimated by the year 2020 that two-thirds American jobs will require at least an associate degree. This gap between employment and education can be addressed, and we are here to offer a solution. House File 24 in support of the PTEC bill is a model that can help bridge this gap. The PTEC model calls for more strategic alignment between our partners who cares for and have an investment in the children's and Minnesota's economic future. It also addresses the inequities that exist in education and an employment system that prevents students of color and Native and Indigenous students from completing their education and finding livable and sustainable wage jobs. HAB's experience as a community-based organization has helped us fine-tune our approach to the workforce shortage. We have heard from our community members that learning career readiness and college skills earlier on can help lead to a successful attainment of a certification and/or college degree. Culturally specific services that is tailored to the cultural needs and values of the community, such as mentors who reflect the students by mentor, enhances the self-efficacy of students' engagement in school and on the job. Additionally, the engagement of family members is critical to a student's post-secondary and work readiness attitude. The facts are this: there is a workforce shortage, and there is a Southeast Asian population that needs jobs. And there is also an army of young people ready to be trained and educated to fill these jobs. House File 2400 is a solution to this problem. By doing this, businesses will continue to lose out on a skilled workforce. By doing nothing, many of our families will stay in poverty. Together, HAB and the State of Minnesota can grow our future labor force and make Minnesota businesses and our education system successful while fueling the Minnesota economy. As legislators, you can make a difference when you invest in this model. On behalf of my organization, the communities and businesses, and the families that we serve each day, we look forward to working with you to continue making the state a great place to live, work, and play. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Principal Vang. Principal Vang, I would like to kind of go back to that question that we were discussing a little bit right before the recess, and then that Dr. Davis touched on when we came back. And you are a leader in a school here in Minnesota, which does have open enrollment, PSEO, concurrent enrollment. So we have those things. I guess what I would like to know is, why do you believe PTEC is needed, even though we have those particular options already in Minnesota? What's the difference, or what do you anticipate, or the data from other PTEC sites lead you to advocate for PTEC?
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's a wonderful question. Just a point of clarification, I'm not a principal. I'd love to be one, but I don't have the credential, so I apologize
President.
For that.
Excuse me, President.
So I guess the question back to all of us is, although we have those programs, are those programs working? Are we closing the disparity gaps? From the role that I sit in as a CEO of an organization that serves, you know, not only Hmong community, but emerging community that are poised and ready to enter the labor force, the programs are not benefiting the community that I represent and I serve. And so from my position, it's really thinking about, if something is not working, why continue, you know, to talk about those programs and not offer different solutions to close the disparity gaps?
Thank you, President Vang. Any further comments, questions? Mr. Davis, I just have one final piece. I want to make sure I understand the data sheet that you handed out. So would it be accurate to say that the PTEC students complete in a half the amount of time as the six-year numbers that we're looking at? So if we're looking at Minnesota, it looks like 40.93% of our students who start at a six-year institution graduate in 6 years. But if I'm looking at the yellow, which is the PTEC in the cohorts, we see that, we'll look, you have it broken out here by race. We'll see that our black students, 48% of them graduate with a degree within 3 years, and there's no cost. Is that correct?
So it's a three-year graduation rate in comparison to a state's six-year graduation rate for all degrees. Oh. But keep in mind that our degrees are all in STEM. So if you would look within that 40%, and particularly that first completed at a starting institution in Minnesota, I'm sure that the STEM completion is less than the 40% that's there, because the 40% includes all degree types.
Yes. Thank you. It looks like a pretty stellar result. All right. Thank you so much. Chair Daphne.
One last question, Mr. Davis. I know there's a national evaluation of the PTEC model being done. Do you know when we'll receive that data? When will that be completed?
I would imagine that within the next 3 years, the MDRC study is looking at these first seven New York City PTECs, and I would imagine within 3 years you'd see some data.
Thank you,
Mr. Davis. I think Mr. Representative Erdahl had his hand up first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And not directly related, but do you have a teacher shortage in New York? We have one in Minnesota.
Mr. Davis.
We don't have a teacher shortage that I'm aware of. I do think that we struggle within the next couple of years to make sure that we have a leadership pipeline to make sure that we don't have a leadership shortage.
Chair Yukin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Davis, what can you give me an example of some of the different industry partners that you have in New York around this program?
Sure. You have National Grid, you have SAP, you have Con Edison, you have Microsoft.
And Chair Yukin?
Madam Chair, thank you, Dr. Davis. This seemed to be all rather large companies. Do you have any smaller homegrown companies that work in this, or is this available to them as well? And then also, I'm still hung up on the 2 years free, like who pays for that?
Mr. Davis, and also, if you also have knowledge of other PTEC sites beyond New York and some of those industry partners, I think that could be illuminating as well. Mr. Davis.
Members, though it sounds great to be referred to as Dr. Davis, I'm not Dr. Davis. But www.ptech.org is the website, and you can go and see the smaller companies that are partnered with colleges throughout the state of New York, but also throughout the other states that have replicated the PTEC model. In reference to the cost sharing of the degree completion, once again, that is done through New York City and the City University of New York. They share the costs for what it to pay the teachers to teach the costs, and for all the supplies and the tuition in terms of that the students receive. That is not a part of the school's operating budget. Once again, it's agreed upon decision with a 13th early college in New York City, so that's not unique in terms of to PTEC, to where the college course sharing exists. It's just that the opportunity to have a first in line job experience after completing an actually rigorous degree and not some college credits.
Thank you. Any further questions, members? Thank you very much. And next we'll have up Amy Wallstein. Amy is the Director of Government Relations with the Minnesota Precision Manufacturing Association. Ms. Wallstein, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I'm Amy Wallstein, and like the Chair said, I'm the Government Relations Director for the Precision Manufacturing Association. So thank you for having me here today to speak about the intersection of PTEC and the early college model and our skilled workforce training. MPMA is a trade organization representing about 300 of Minnesota's contract manufacturers, primarily in metals. So we generally have machinists and sheet metal workers in our facilities. Our main challenges for the manufacturing workforce are attracting the next generation of skilled employees and training workers for current and future jobs. On the attract side, we do a lot of work at the high school level to expose students to careers in manufacturing. And we do this through programs like the U-Skills Training Program, which Chair Javney is championing in the House and Senator Paul Anderson is championing in the Senate. And we do this through supporting student manufacturing programs like the student-run manufacturing program at St. Francis High School and the student-run manufacturing program at Hutchinson High School. We also support students through scholarships to technical college. And one of the things that we're seeing in manufacturing as a challenge is defining the education and career pathway for skilled and technical workers. The best machinists are the ones who have gone through technical colleges. That's the gold standard for training. And what we used to see was tech school graduates coming from technical colleges into manufacturing and needing, you know, some additional on-the-job instruction. But that pathway is waning a bit as enrollment has been down and more jobs have becoming available. So now we're seeing employees coming straight out of high school but aren't ready for advanced machining jobs. So they're receiving internal training and sometimes they're going back to technical college. That pathway of going back to technical college is kind of what I wanted to kind of bring forward in this conversation. It's difficult in this economy for students to return to college once they've been working. And as we're looking at the future of the industry, we're thinking on ways of how we can do more at the high school level to ramp students straight into those post-secondary technical education, basically creating that bridge between the technical classes, CTE classes that they're taking at the high schools and their post-secondary training. So we see great potential in programs that can bridge that CTE at the high school and the technical college training that gets into that skilled manufacturing, that those more skilled positions. The PTEC model and other early college models can help students who are technically inclined to see that career pathway that leads them to a highly skilled job. One thing I wanted to point out was the average age of students entering technical colleges in the metro is between 26 and 29. So what if we could shorten that up and we could have students who are entering into their or having a streamlined program through a PTEC or an early college model, then we can shorten up the time that students are in the workforce and not with that advanced degree that they need for their industry. So we think that this is another solution. There's a lot of solutions that have been talked about this year, but we think that this PTEC early college model could have some potential to help our skilled manufacturing industry in Minnesota.
Well, thank you, Ms. Wallstein. Any comments or questions, members? Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Ms. Wallstein. We have this, not this exact program in Faribault, but it's kind of a leading into it through a company called MRG Tool and Die, and they're involved with the MPMA very much. And what it does for our community is phenomenal. It gets people interested early on so they know, have an idea of what's out there to go into. So it's a great program, this type of program. It's not the exact program, but they're entering towards this type of a program, and it really is phenomenal what it does for our town and our employers and the kids to get into a workforce with, you know, very minimal debt as they get into college or technical college. This is awesome for them to get involved in the technical trades. So I think it's a great program.
Thank you. Any further comments? Ms. Wallstein, and you think PTEC, do you get a sense that some of the Minnesota manufacturers would be interested perhaps as being partners, or you can't speak for obviously for something that doesn't exist yet, but the question is do you see that it's a good fit to help with that workforce crisis?
Madam Chair, members, I do think that more of the industry-involved, employer-led programs, I think that's where we're seeing a lot of energy right now. I see the PTEC model, the early college model, as something that, you know, as it gets going and we see some pilots going in this model, that more of the MPMA members, the smaller manufacturers, would get involved.
Thank you. Thank you.
Madam Chair, thank you. Ms. Wallstein, thank you for that. I trust you know the good people at Enterprise Minnesota.
Chair Dabney, I do, and I'm eager to get to their event. Governor Walz is speaking very soon.
That was one of the more diplomatic ways of telling a member to be quiet, or at least brief. Well done.
Is there a question?
I don't know that I'm allowed to anymore.
The question has been silenced.
I'm just noting that in the Enterprise Minnesota survey, about the need is greatest for workforce in greater Minnesota. Does that fit MMA's experience?
Chair Dabney, Chair Nelson, what we're seeing, manufacturing is widespread throughout Minnesota, and there are pockets, regional hubs of manufacturing throughout Minnesota, and workforce challenges, I think, have been seen faster. We've been experiencing this for at least a decade in many regions throughout the state manufacturing, that there is a skilled worker shortage.
One last question.
Sure, Dan.
You referenced the U-Skills training program.
Yeah.
Briefly, as I recall, is it 5 or 10 sites in the state that are using it, and don't they tend to be multiple industry opportunities for students as opposed to a solo industry opportunity? Can you speak to that?
Chair Dabney, Chair Nelson, and members, the U-Skills training program is a program through the Department of Labor, and that it's a program that's designed to bring schools, high schools, and some colleges together with local partners in industry and oftentimes intermediaries like chambers of commerce. And that program is in its pilot phase. Department of Labor has approved 5 programs in the pilot phase right now. So that's Hutchinson, the Goodhue County Red Wing Collaborative, Twin West Chamber, West Metro Collaborative, White Bear Lake and East Metro, and then Winona. Those are the 5 that are operational for this school year. And 5 more are slated to come online next year. They've already been approved through a competitive grant program process with the Department of Labor.
Thank you.
And those are in, to get to my point on what industries they're serving right now is primarily manufacturing, and then several are emerging in healthcare. Intermediate District 287 is a healthcare program, as does Whipper Lake.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first, to maybe answer Representative Joachim's question a little bit regarding Hutchinson, one of the main benefactors of the technical program there is 3M. And now, Ms. Wallstein, what I've been told is that in terms of the workforce in Greater Minnesota, that one of the two big problems that we have is lack of affordable housing and lack of daycare, that it's hard to get people to come to work in Greater Minnesota, be it manufacturing or whatever, if they have no place to live and no one to take care of their children. Mm-hmm. Is that what you have identified as well as two of the big impediments to recruiting workers in Greater Minnesota?
Ms. Wallstein, a little different than you had expected, but we can take a little rabbit trail here. This is Wallstein.
Madam Chair and Representative Erdahl, certainly the workforce shortages are being compounded by lack of available transportation in some communities and lack of health, lack of daycare in some communities. I think we see that in the metro as well as Greater Minnesota, but that is something that has been bubbling up in Greater Minnesota, I think, faster over the last decade.
Thank you. I've seen no further questions. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Wallstein. Next, we have one other area that we will highlight today. This is a provision that is in the Senate, but not the House. Chair Yuki.
Oh, I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I thought you were going to have more testifiers. I wasn't sure. I had a question for you about the bill.
Yes.
Just so I understand, the language on 43.15 through 43.20.
Added to the page.
Oh, I'm so sorry. R32A2.
And what line number, Chair Yukin?
In particular, let's see. the 43.15 to 43.20, but then also the on 42.26, the cost-free education.
Mm-hmm.
I was just wondering, I know we had so many bills introduced over here in the House, and even though we had two committees, it was hard to get through all of them. And I know with one committee in the Senate, I'm sure it was even harder. That's probably why we each have different language, different provisions in our bills, because there was just too much to get through. But I was wondering, did you have a chance to have this go through higher ed? I talked to our chairs over here, and if we would have heard it, it would have definitely had to go through higher ed, because we're asking our post-secondary institutions to make some substantial investments.
Chair Youakim, Senator Paul Anderson, who's chair of higher education, is a co-sponsor on the bill. We did discuss whether it needed to go through higher ed or not. It does not at this point, because these are startup grants, and obviously before it would be 4 years before we would be seeking any investment from our higher education institutions. However, we believe that there are ways to get very close to that cost-free education. That is one of the tenets of PTEC, quite frankly, that it is a cost-free. And so there are some ideas that we will flesh out as we get closer to that point. But there is no ask of our higher education institutions in this bill or in this language.
Madam
Chair Youakim.
Quick follow-up. I could understand that it might be out in the tails, but we all know that starting a program, making sure that all the I's are dotted and T's are crossed so that we know it's going to have a good grounding and be set up right to start with. I'd hate to throw money out in the front and then have a higher ed institution not be able to deliver in the end because they have some cost drivers that they're facing right now as well. So just a little concerned that it's not quite ready for prime time when it comes to dealing with our higher education institutions, especially if it hasn't had a hearing. And I know that there are a lot of amazing work that our higher education institutions are already doing with our local business communities, like what Representative Jasinski said and Representative Erdahl said. And those, they're scrambling for dollars too. So I'm a little worried about pulling away from things that we've seen are already working to stir on something that we're not quite sure where it's going to be in a few.
Well, thank you, Chair Youakim, for those questions. Senator Anderson also serves on education, so he did hear this bill, which is why he realized it doesn't need to go to higher ed at this point. But there's a couple clarifications. What we're doing is not working. That is the point. What we're doing is not working. We have significant numbers. You can look at our students, particularly our students of color, and look at the 3-year graduation rates, and also look at the fact that our students have some of the highest debt ratios in the nation. This is like a ball and chain around their ankle as they go forward. And so the model in front of you does not require all higher education institutions to participate. In fact, it doesn't require any higher education institutions to participate. The model is for those three willing partners, a community college, a public high school, and an industry partner. So it's innovative in that it is not a one-size-fits-all for everyone. It is those three willing partners, I would call it the magic sauce, the secret sauce, where these three partners line up together and develop the PTEC models that have been so successful in other places. But please don't think for 1 minute that this is a mandate to all higher education institutions or all high schools, or that we would in any way mandate that we have industry partners. This provision is an innovative provision that can help Minnesota move to making sure that all of our kids are getting the education for 21st century jobs without massive debt. It also provides that wonderful, it's like passing the baton between runners. That's really where races are won or lost. What happens in that baton handoff? And that's what happens, what we see with our kids so often. Our kids go from one setting to another, and there's no real baton handoff. And yet the PTEC model, that's one of its innovations that we've talked about for so long, is bridging this gap in the silos, that we see in K-12 education and higher education. And PTEC is able to do that. But it is not a one-size-fits-all. It's not a mandate on any one. It's an opportunity for innovation by those partners who have interest. And also then there's that local control aspect, too, where what one industry partner needs or what one city needs is very different than what another, because the industries that are in that city or in that town are very different. So I understand, one, your desire about, I think, if I understand correctly, about lowering the cost of higher education for our students. And this is one way that will significantly do that. There are different avenues for years 13 and 14. It's a little premature at this point to develop those, but there are opportunities to further develop those as we go forward. But the application process is for the startup grants. And it's quite interesting. My email has really been flooded, unsolicited, from community colleges in our state that are interested, saying, oh, we're very interested in this. From industry partners saying, wow, this is just what we need. How can I get involved? And from our public schools saying, you know, this is something we'd like to do. And, you know, we want to make sure that we're not limiting this innovation to just one spot in a particular economic region. So there's the concern about PTEC is that it might be such a limit that we're going to have more demand than there are resources. We're starting out in a sense a pilot, but then again, it's innovation. It also adopts the innovation of competency-based learning. I know a number of folks on these committees are interested in competency-based learning. So there's a number of I think positive things about that, but to answer your question directly, the higher education chair is very comfortable with this bill. There is no reason for it to go to higher education this year.
Madam Chair, thank you.
Chair Yuki.
Thank you for the answer, and one more thing, and we can move on, and I really appreciate you bringing this so we could hear more about it, and I agree with you about the debt costs, but we are making a promise here that it's 9th through 14th by starting down this road, and I want to make sure that there's somebody there that the baton can be handed off to. So I would hate, a lot of the times up here, we have people come to us saying, please do this because we have the program ready to go. I'm just not hearing that from higher ed communities. I guess my inbox hasn't been flooded, even though we're on conference committee and we're getting a lot of emails. But I just worry about not having a baton, someone to hand the baton off to, since there seems to be other avenues and other programs that are working very well in members' districts right at this table. And so that, to me, that says that we have the ability to already do a lot of this with our school and within the school, with our PSEO program, with our middle college, a lot of other different avenues. So it just, maybe I'm just a little uncomfortable wanting to make sure that higher ed is brought in the loop so that we're not making promises that we can't keep.
Thank you, Chair Yu. I am confident that at an appropriate time, they definitely will be. But again, this is in addition to, it's not instead of. I think I've heard that from Chair Dabney, in addition to, not instead of. And again, as things progress, I'm sure you'll hear from those institutions that are interested in participating. But again, starting small, and there have been great results that have far eclipsed Minnesota's results. And again, it's bridging that gap between those two silos. Chair Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, let me say I'm thrilled that the Minnesota Senate GOP has signed on with the idea of free community college.
Chair Dabney,
I'm hoping that this is a wedge.
Put words in my mouth.
This provides access to free community college. So I'm hoping that this can be a wedge to helping more Minnesota students develop those 21st century skills, as you spoke of. be prepared for the workforce and do so debt-free. So I'm just thrilled with you know, if we were to go forward on this, you know, where the possibilities may lie in the future.
Oh, thank you, Chair Dabney. I see that as a great endorsement. Actually, there are a lot of possibilities here. So
Chair, I'm noticing that there are some department staff on CTE in the audience, and I'm wondering, as you said, in addition to, if they could come forward and give us the larger landscape. Obviously, the Good Work and Senator Jasinski's district that he just spoke of is CTE programming. It's not PTEC, as he made clear. Get a better understanding of the context that you're proposing this in.
Chair Dabney, mm-hmm. I'm afraid we cannot do that today. We have a hard stop here at 3:45.
I was unaware of that.
We may be able to get to it later, mm-hmm. but we do have one other. So let's just kind of put a hand, hold that for a second, hold those ideas. We have one other piece that was on the agenda for today is the curriculum best practice sharing. This was a provision that was a Senate provision, not in the House, but we had a little bit of discussion about that earlier. And so I'd like to have John Voss, Director of Teaching and Learning for Intermediate District 287. Mr. Voss could come up and talk a little bit about what's happening now, why the curriculum best practice sharing might help, and how you see it being implemented. Mr. Voss, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Chair, I'm John Voss, the Director of Teaching and Learning for Intermediate District 287.
Mr. Voss.
And on behalf of District 287, I'd like to thank the Senate Committee for including and recognizing the work that we've done with digital curriculum in this proposal. And I'd also like to thank the House Committee for supporting some of our other priorities around school safety and school embedded mental health grants. As we have proceeded with digital curriculum projects, we started number of open education resource initiatives back in 2011-2012 when the social studies standards changed and the sixth grade classes were expected to cover Minnesota studies, but there was at that time no curriculum available for a lot of districts to purchase. So as districts talked about how they were going to address that, we proposed that if they contributed some money to write a course with their teachers, that would save them some money and give them that opportunity. We discovered that at the same time there are a number of similar initiatives with some other cooperatives around the state, in middle school math and the eastern part of the state, and in grade 7 social studies in the south part of the state. So we began to talk to other cooperatives about what if we did this on a larger scale, and through that conversation we proposed that if as many districts as were interested contributed $1 per student, we could develop as many courses as that funding permitted. And by the time the dust settled, we had about 200-plus districts that were interested, and we laid out a plan to develop 40 courses in grades 3 through 12 in English language arts, math, science, and social studies, the four core areas. We have about two more that we're working on completing right now, and we've had teams of teachers from all of the partner districts that work on putting those materials together, and also teams of curriculum directors and specialists who review all of the materials that are created in order to assure they meet the standards and a number of other things that our districts identified as important elements.
Thank you, Mr. Voss. Any comments or questions? Chair Yuki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Voss, thank you so much for all the work you do in 287. It's a pretty amazing place. I know I'm going to take another tour when session's done and before school's over. Could you remind me, was this a bill that you guys brought forward, or?
It started out as a proposal for creating curriculum aligned to standards, and then as the events unfolded, we were included in that planning, and so we're more than happy to assist in putting what we've done as far as the process and the platform at the disposal of the Department of Education or whoever else is in need of it in order to help develop what's necessary to meet standards for some of those districts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Chair? I'll wait until you're ready.
Chair Yukin.
Just so, was that a no, it wasn't an individual bill? I didn't quite catch that.
I'm not sure where it originated. We didn't originate the initial part of it, but I believe it was initiated in the Senate committee.
All right, thank you. I wish I would have known about it. I might have had a chance to have a hearing on it, so thank you.
Any further discussion? We're glad that we got you here today to speak to this a little bit. And any further comments? We do know that digital learning provides great opportunities. I appreciate your work in the past, Mr. Voss, in getting those open educational resources available. We want to make sure that all of our schools have that ability and give our teachers the opportunity to showcase their great lesson plans as well. So, all right. See any other comments? All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Thank you. Voss. Members, just to give you a little bit of a layout of what we will be doing, we're going to take a recess to the call of the chair. There are a few other things that are that we need to be at today. However, we'll also perhaps be able to come back later this afternoon. I would say it'd be closer to perhaps, let's see, perhaps 7 tonight. I guess that's closer in the evening. But we will, it will, a lot will depend upon, you know, we're in the final days here. We have a lot of moving pieces. So for the moment, we are adjourned to the call of the chair. A recess, excuse me. We are recessed to the call of the chair. Thank you.